Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Over the past 8 years, the number of magnitude 3.0 earthquakes in Oklahoma has skyrocketed from a historical average of about 1.5 a year to averaging just under 250 over the past 7 years, with 890 quakes in 2015 alone. Well, this has prompted grassroots oppositions to the fracking process and for the high-volume wastewater injection well sites, which scientists say cause the earthquakes. My guest today has produced a documentary film that started out to examine the state's reticence to acknowledge that link between earthquakes and wastewater injection wells. But as state officials finally acknowledged the science, it's instead focused on another important issue, whether local communities can regulate the energy industry within their jurisdiction. Oklahoma Shakedown follows the activists of Stop Fracking Payne County and their efforts to force the city of Stillwater to enact zoning restrictions on the energy industry. And also, it also tells the story of fracking and wastewater injection wells on the earthquake swarms that have occurred in north central Oklahoma. My guest today is the documentary filmmaker behind Oklahoma Shakedown. The producer, director, and editor, Taylor Mullins, joins us today. He has a showing tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Circle Cinema. There'll be a pre-discussion and a question and answer after the film. The film just won Best Oklahoma Documentary at the Bare Bones Film Festival over the weekend. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Taylor Mullins, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
How did this film, Oklahoma Shakedown, come about? What made you decide to make a documentary film about the huge earthquake swarm we're having in north central Oklahoma?
Well, first of all, I grew up in Oklahoma City, in the Oklahoma City area. I went to school in Norman for my undergrad and master's. And while I was back for my master's, I needed to do a final project. And at the time, we were starting to really see the earthquakes pick up, and people really starting to report a lot of damages. And so I decided one weekend to take my girlfriend out on a quote-unquote romantic tour of the small towns of Oklahoma, where I take her to the best, you know, motels in all these towns and, you know, just kind of look at what was going on there and talk to the citizens. So we went to Cherokee, Medford, Guthrie, and Perry and felt several earthquakes in that time. And the really frustrating thing was when you started talking to these people in these small towns, they felt like there's nothing they can do. No one particularly likes it. Some people, you know, do have money from the oil industry out there, and so they really just kind of get by with it. They can afford to pay any damages, but majority of the people out there don't have the oil rights, and they really feel like they don't have a voice to speak up. They don't want to speak out against their neighbors.
Do you find debates within a town as you were
small, not as much as you'd think, because like I was saying, no one wants to speak out against their neighbors. These are small towns of several hundred to maybe a couple thousand people. Nobody wants to be the reason why they're, you know, the guy down the street is no longer making $2 million a year. And so they just deal with it and try to see the benefits. But, you know, the big problem is the small amounts of damage. It is these smaller quakes, but they're causing damages to these small towns. These are old buildings. These are farms that have been there since the land run. They are not going to be able to withstand something more or even just sustain small quakes for the next few years.
One of the things that the film pointed to is the idea that we might have a larger six and a half, seven event. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly a fear from a seismologist as well as people who have studied the issue. But has there actually been damage from the succession of twos, threes, and fours, say, in a given area? Is it mainly cracks in masonry or is it more substantial?
Well, certainly. And it really ranges. And you have to go to the different areas to look at it. In the small towns, there's definitely a lot of damage. And the problem with it is that it looks like simple aging, except it's happened really fast. It's cracks in the foundation, walls literally separating from ceilings. When I was in Cherokee, the courthouse had actually been damaged by a bigger quake earlier that day at one point, which the mayor later denied knowing about, despite the fact that it was on the front page of the Enid newspaper 50 miles away. But yeah, you're seeing the damage. The Prague quake a few years back, that was our biggest one. There's lawsuits going forward from people that were injured in that quake. I've talked to those people. Sadly, they're not featured in the documentary. They were going through too many issues at the time to appear and speak on that. But yeah, I mean, there is damage. Look at the earthquake insurance. That's something that, part of my language, it pisses me off. Like, you see, you know, it's not a lot of money each month. It's probably around $20 for some of these bigger plans. But why should Oklahomans be paying for something that an industry is causing? Yes, it brings in lots of jobs, and you can't stop that industry in Oklahoma. It's vital. However, if, you know, Walmart came to your small town and set up shop and brought all these jobs, but every once in a while someone started a trash fire, people would be really upset if they had to go take out extra fire insurance. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, here we just allow it to happen.
You mentioned the insurance, but you really don't focus a lot on insurance. One of the big questions is, if there was a big event, mm-hmm. would insurance companies actually pay off on the earthquake insurance? Because most of the time, man-made quakes are an exclusion.
Right. That's the thing. That's going to come down to policies. Many of them, at least when I was filming the documentary, and I was thinking about doing a separate side piece on this because it's a bigger issue. Luckily, they changed a lot of this. But at the time, a majority of those did not cover man-made earthquakes. Now, since, you know, finally the governor has spoken up a little bit about it, and some of these policies have changed, you know, what they cover. However, one of the biggest problems is mostly, from what I've seen, is it's a 10% deductible on the damage of the house. So not one of these quakes is going to cause $10,000, $15,000 worth of damage to your house. At least you hope not. It's the small bit over time, and that simply can't be proven. I mean, anyone that's ever been in a car wreck knows what it's like to deal with an insurance agent and proving what's gone on. And so just imagine bringing in pictures of these cracks that look like, you know, aging damage, but, you know, it's happened over a series of 6 months. It's kind of a sham, and it's sad to see.
Yeah. Now, the focus of the film, I would imagine it was quite difficult to actually find a focus of the film, because when you probably started filming, the Oklahoma Geological Survey, the governor's office, the Corporation Commission was saying, well, the science is not settled on whether – and, of course, the science has been settled mm-hmm. for 30 or 40 years.
Very true.
And the National Geological Survey and all your national sources were saying, yes, mm-hmm. Injection wells, if you pump great volumes of wastewater into formations, it's going to cause man-made quakes. So when you started, that was the reaction of the governor's office,
and yes,
they were moving very slowly. They were saying the science was unsettled. But probably by the time you finished the film, they were finally coming around to saying, oh, well, yes, this mm-hmm. does cause it, and now the Corporation Commission is
of course,
working.
Yeah.
So how did that affect the focus of your film? Because your focus is a really another important policy that's come out of all these earthquakes, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Right. Well, the film really evolved. When I first started it, it was, is fracking causing these earthquakes? That was the question. That was, you know, what I put down on all my papers. Like, this is the question of this film. Very quickly, as soon as I started talking to people, it became aware that it's not fracking. It's how they deal with the wastewater and disposing of that. And that's very important to understand, because originally in this debate, it was kind of like when the cigarette companies, you know, were called out for their health stuff. They made it a battle of semantics. Same thing when you see with evolution, things like that. You know, it turns into a battle of semantics, and that's what it was. So then it evolved from, is wastewater causing this? And I expected a really contentious issue, like what you were saying. You know, no one was accepting that, especially when I went into interview with Dr. Austin Holland. To my surprise, Dr. Austin Holland was very open with me about the fact that these quakes are being caused by groundwater disposal. I was, I believe, the first person he came and talked to about that. He talked to Vice News the next day about the same issue. And a slight little bit after the documentary finished, he left that position.
We should mention he's the former chief seismologist.
Former chief seismologist. And, you know, I can't really speak to that. There's a lot of stuff that I kept out of the film for, you know, any sort of like legal reasons. But I will say that a lot of people, from what they've told me, is not only was he pressured out, but Harold Hamm and many of the people involved in, you know, Continental Energy helped him find a new job in another state. So mm-hmm. You know, you got to look at that. Now I believe that department's run by a graduate student mm-hmm. or something along those lines.
Now, we were talking about, should it be about fracking or whether, you know, injection wells. And, of course, we know injection wells is what are causing mm-hmm. these high volume. We're talking 40 to 50,000 barrels going down at a time of wastewater, which is causing the earthquake swarms. But I love something that Angela Spotts, one of your spokespeople on the film and sort of the protagonist of the film mm-hmm. in many ways, she said, you know, you can't separate the injection wells from fracking. It's right. all part of one.
It's one, the final step in the process. It's yeah. what they do with all the, not only the frack fluid, which, you know, we're not allowed to know what's in that, but also just all the water that's just been down in the earth for, you know, thousands and millions of years, carcinogenic things. It has to go somewhere. And not only were we pumping it down, you know, from fracking operations in our state, but we're taking it from Kansas and Texas and other nearby states who have legislatures that, when they started seeing the earthquakes, stopped injecting here. And we're like, oh, we'll just send it to Oklahoma then. You know, they'll take it. you know, they're, you know, legislature's not really paying attention to that. Or they were paying very much attention to it. They just didn't like talking about it very much.
Now, the focus of the film sort of goes on Angela Spotts and her organization, Stop Fracking Payne County.
Right.
And it also goes to a very important issue, which some people may be aware of, but maybe a lot of people have not. The city of Stillwater was, and has actually, by the end of the film, you let us know that they finally passed an ordinance to sort of regulate where you can drill, where you can frack, where you can do this wastewater right. injection wells. And the focus of the film is this sort of battle between Payne County and the Stillwater and the activists in Payne County, as well as the industry trying to stop this regulation. And while you could see the political pressure brought to bear on the Stillwater City Council as they consider this, you see the lobbyists in there just, you know, making catastrophic statements if there's if there's setbacks from housing to do this. And finally, what they do is an in run around into the legislature. And that's the big issue is that the legislature has passed this bill that says that a lot of the zoning decisions in terms of the energy industry has to go to the Corporation Commission. It's taken away local control.
Right. No, despite the fact that, you know, Stillwater passed that much higher level, you know. I'm not a policy specialist. That all gets bungled for me. So I'll speak very bluntly as not to misspeak. But essentially, yes, they while Stillwater passed not to allow any more fracking or drilling in these residential areas. And they're blocking areas such as schools and playgrounds that people just wanted to frack closer to. Yeah, it's now in charge of the Corporation Commission for what they deem as acceptable. And of course, as soon as Stillwater passed those, you know, zoning laws, many corporations and their lobbyists came out and said these are not acceptable standards. Another interesting thing, you mentioned that town hall. And this was brought to my attention just recently when we were at the festival. I was talking to several of the activists. We had many former veterans show up and talk about how important it was to drill for oil here, because if not, we have to go overseas to fight for it. Which, you know, if you remember when the Iraq War and all that protest came out, you know, it was, this is not a war for oil. Now we have, you know, people openly saying that. That's an issue aside. Apparently, many local energy companies sent out mass emails to employees that were former veterans with talking points to come to meetings like this and say these sort of things. And of course, you know, I can't prove that that's hearsay, but you see at least one example of that in the film. And they're attacking it from all angles. And it's disgusting that they use that angle now. You know, especially after the whole hubbub, this isn't a war for oil. And now it's like, oh, yeah, clearly we're in war for oil, but we got to do it here.
Yeah. The name of the film is Oklahoma Shakedown. It has a showing tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at the Circle Cinema. My guest today is a documentary filmmaker. He was a director, producer, and I think you're editor as well of the film, Taylor Mullins, which the film won Best Oklahoma Documentary at the Bare Bones Film Festival just over the weekend.
Yes,
and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. You mentioned, you said one of the first places you went to Cherokee, Oklahoma, and you hear from two really interesting different residents of Cherokee. You have David Collins. It looks like he's got a spread there.
He's a little bed and breakfast.
A little bed and breakfast. He takes you out to these high injection well sites around Cherokee. Then on the other hand, you have the mayor of Cherokee, Karen Hawkins.
And, lovely woman.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the two of them have very diametrically opposed opinions of this. Collins is really worried about the effect on his property because his place is shaking all the time. It's an old house. It's his means of business. And then Karen Hawkins looks at it and says, hey, this is part of the, this has been great for Cherokee.
They love the new subway that it brought.
Yeah.
Not to be condescending or anything, but that's their talking. That was one of her big talking points. You know, we have this new come and go with a subway and a Burger King. We didn't have that. We have a Sonic. And that's the trade-off.
She said it's been an economic boom. And really, some of her language gets quite blunt about some of her constituents. They're just whining. If they weren't whining about this, they'd be whining about something else.
Right. And that just goes back to the argument about how people say, you know, people are making money off this. Not everybody is making money off that. One thing that I see out in Colorado now a lot are these highly produced pro-fracking ads featuring farmers talking about how much that helps them. And yes, it helps farmers. And we should help farmers, but it certainly doesn't help all farmers. Those are farmers, you know, the farmers without a voice are not being represented in those videos. You know, those are very expensive videos that I guarantee those farmers are not paying for and creating. Like, there's someone behind all these ads. And that's another thing people need to realize. You know, there's interest behind anything you're going to see on TV on each side of this issue.
Yeah. One of the things I learned from this film is my sort of preconceptions of what a high-volume wastewater injection well was completely undone by this film, because David Collins actually takes you out to some of these injection wells. Were you surprised by what you saw when you went out there?
I was surprised by how frequently you saw them once you get out into northern Oklahoma. They look very similar to the regular wells. They have a little extra gun barrel on the top. You'll see that in the film. But
very much like the oil storage sites,
right,
where you see the, you know, the tanks.
And they're storing frack fluid ready to be put back down in instead of oil. So,
yeah.
But also separating oil from that if you want to get into the technical side. But yeah, the frequency of that, of seeing those out there, was amazing. And another thing, you know, I shouldn't have been there in the first place, but there were several times where I was filming up near wells that kicked on when I was there. And within moments, I started getting queasy, you know, in my stomach and, you know, feeling a little dizzy. It's, you know, it's leaking stuff back out there. It's, you know, and of course, that's silly me. I shouldn't be walking across these things that say, you know, do not enter, dangerous chemicals. And then I'm surprised when I get sick. But that well specifically that I'm speaking about is right on the border of the Oklahoma Great Salt Plains, one of the most beautiful landmarks I've ever seen that I had no idea was out there. There is a disposal well and frack well 20 meters from, you know, one of the back observation ports, because they can't technically frack on that land, but they can go right down next to it and then go right under it. So,
mm-hmm. Also what's interesting to me was I always assumed there was somebody monitoring these wells. It's all remotely controlled. It's,
right. If someone was monitoring, I would have been arrested at one plenty of times.
Somebody, you know, somebody in Oklahoma City or an office building says, you know, punches a button, mm-hmm. and then out near Cherokee, all of a sudden that well starts putting down these enormous volumes of wastewater.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, there's someone out there, you know, that we'll see, you know, kind of like maybe a daily manager stops by once a day and checks levels. But, you know, these things leak at times. They've had leaks out by Cherokee, and, you know, it's not good stuff that's leaking out into these fields. Several areas, and again, this wasn't shown in the film because I had to cut things down, but there's spots out there where wells have leaked, and, you know, 5 years ago, and nothing can grow. Well, so
one of the things that has changed is the Corporation Commission, from probably the start with the time you started filming, mm-hmm. to today. It's almost been a 180-degree shift as far as they're regulating this industry, because you're really seeing anytime we have an earthquake swarm, they're coming in and they're shutting down operators.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a good, useful development, you think?
Yeah, of course. I mean, any move towards more regulation on that is a good development. And when you really look at it, though, technically they're making strides. I believe last year, at the end of the year, we had over 950 3-plus magnitude earthquakes. And now, 4 months in, we've had, I think, 225. So we're on pace for maybe 50 less. And so that's an accomplishment. 50 less earthquakes is a great thing, but there's still the other 900 or so. I think the biggest grounds can be made on this in that insurance section. You know, that needs to be addressed. Liability needs to be placed on somebody. And, of course, you know, that's probably the worst word, you know, that a corporation can say is liability, especially over here. And so I doubt you'll see that, but it's a crime that people should have to pay these, you know, earthquake insurance. And that's something I think that everybody, you know, on both sides of the issue can agree on.
I want to play a clip from the film. And this is a professor of geology at OSU used as one of your spokespersons, Todd Hallahan. In it, let's just hear what he has to say.
Okay.
In the energy industry, you can have backyard oil barons as a reality TV show where, hey, we have no idea what we're doing. Hey, we're not competent technically, but hey, we bought a drill rig and we're going to go potentially contaminate groundwater. We're going to potentially cause side effects like earthquakes, and we're potentially going to cause some real serious issues that'll be long-lasting problems for that area because the industry has decided that that's okay. Whereas you have the major companies have huge safety programs and huge regulations and huge amount of training, but those two can exist together. And so one of the huge problems that this is illustrating is that the energy industry can't manage its social components of how do you stop somebody from injecting that may knowingly be creating earthquakes. I don't know that somebody knows that they're creating them in terms of a particular well, but there's nothing in the industry to basically prevent that from happening, because those protocols that are so ingrained at large companies are not necessarily ingrained in a mom-and-pop operation, which is purely legal.
So if I can follow up on what Hallahan said, do you think if we just required all of the oil companies to have that responsibility of a major oil company, do you think this would be a problem that could be manageable in a much better way, do you think?
Again, it would only be less of a problem. You'd still have people putting it out there. You know, like mentioned in the film, if you have the money, you can drill. So, you know, it'd just be – you have to worry, like, wonder also how feasible is that to monitor all these people. Not that it shouldn't be done, but how do you do it? I can't say how to do it. That's another millions and millions of dollars. And, of course, these companies don't want to spend more money. So,
Let me follow up on something Bob Jackman said in the film. He's a petroleum geologist and has been quite outspoken about the whole wastewater injection well situation. He says one of the things is that we've been doing this for a long time, mm-hmm. and we've been doing it a long time without problems. As he puts it, it's really this high volume wastewater injection, you know, 40 to 50,000 barrels at a time blown into the formation. If we just drop that back so it's a much slower process, Mm-hmm. Would that take care of the problem? Did you talk to
I mean, it would slow it, certainly. But again, you have to look at it. That's costing them money. And whatever they can do to not spend money, they're going to do. The faster they get it down, that's less storage. That would, yeah. I mean, you see that in other states, like Ohio. Places that have felt earthquakes, they stopped injecting. Earthquakes stopped. It's simple but complicated math, you know, when you look at it. So I don't like to speak too much on that, not being a scientist. But yeah, in the film, I let, you know, the scientists do the talking on those points. Yeah, there's a number of things that can be done that just simply aren't because of money.
Now, you met some really interesting people. One was Mark Chrisman. Chrisman in Glencoe. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of an amateur scientist.
Yes, but also a former military science electronics engineer. Yeah. Definitely someone that – possibly the smartest person in the film. So,
no, what was it like? What is his concerns?
His concerns, you know, kind of with everybody else, the injustice. You know, he's a very patriotic person that believes, you know, that people have rights.
He's obviously a hunter when we see his ship.
Right. He's not your typical left-wing, you know, activist. He's in there, you know, smoking cigarettes and talking about hunting and, you know, cursing. And he's just angry to see that happen, you know. Angry to see his property breaking. He's got this beautiful piece of land. When you see the film, you'll hear all these birds out there. That's live sound from his farm. And I wanted to keep that in there because it's almost jarring in a way, but it shows you the area he lives in, what he's protecting. You know, he's got this pretty much a bird sanctuary on his land. He loves it. And, you know, that area is being destroyed.
The one thing, I mentioned this earlier, the actual economic damage for a lot of these residents in where they've experienced those swarms. Has anybody put dollar figures on what sort of damages they're looking at?
I mean, that's another contentious point. You know, you'll hear in the millions is what everyone's going to tell you, the tens of millions of personal property damage. You know, sadly, a lot of that can't be proven. And you are going to have people that might try to fake that as well. Another thing that came up, Dakota Raines, who speaks in the film, was mentioning to me he was a lot of sociology work and recently met with – I can't remember the exact department, but whoever is basically in charge of grading our infrastructure across the state, our bridges and everything like that, we got a D. Oh. And that's bad. You know, if one of these big quakes hit, those are going down. Like, even if it's something not, you know, super catastrophic, like a 6 or plus, but a high 5 could drop some of these bridges in these rural areas that could, you know, isolate many communities.
Yeah. So. He also spoke about the psychological toll, and I'm wondering if you sort of sense that as you talk to some of the residents, especially those who didn't necessarily make the film, but you know, the average people who are talking about this. Mm-hmm. Did you get a sense that there's a psychological toll?
There certainly is. I mean, you can start on one end, on like a small scale level of just being woken up in the middle of the night. You know, some of these older people don't need to be woken up once, twice in the middle of the night, and you don't know what woke you up. You just wake up and, you know, dogs are always barking and everything like that. That's an amazing thing in Cherokee. Whenever before one of these would hit, all the dogs would start barking on the street. And then moments later, you'd hear a boom, and then it'd be the earthquake hitting. But then you can look at another, you know, higher level. And I didn't have anyone, you know, specifically talk to this on camera, but I have talked to people, you know, ex-soldiers and stuff that have post-traumatic stress. You know, these earthquakes, you know, it's a boom and a rumble. Like, there's some people in these small towns that have to go through that, you know. So, yeah, I mean, any sort of anything that's going to break out of your normality like that is going to cause you psychological issues, especially something that's so new and shocking as an earthquake. It's really jarring.
Now, you do spend a little bit of time at the end of the film talking about the Cushing storage facility. Of course, we did have a little small swarm of earthquakes late last year.
They shut that down pretty quick.
Very quickly. And this is a storage facility. Of course, it's holding about 58 million barrels of oil in storage. And I know Bob Jackman in the film,
his big concern. I mean, essentially, Cushing has one of the largest oil, you know, reserves in the United States, and it's all sitting out there in this area that is shaking. And when those facilities were created, they were not created to withstand earthquakes. And so, if something big hits out there, the very least, it's going to be a mess. You know, at most, it's a nationwide economic disaster.
Yeah. So now, the city of Stillwater has passed the setbacks, even though the Corporation Commission officially has to review all these sorts of regulatory zoning in regard to the energy industry. Do you think there's going to be a lawsuit over this, over whether the state can seize control over these local functions?
Well, I'm sure eventually someone's going to sue somebody in it, especially when it comes to the, you know, these oil people losing, if they lose business.
Has the Corporation Commission and the City of Stillwater sort of come to an accommodation at this point, or what's going on?
I'm not really aware of how that situation has evolved because it is changing so quickly. Even, you know, I was actually in the final editing stages of the film when they finally came out and passed those things. They delayed it for months and months and months.
Well, your film shows these delays that keep occurring as they're watching the legislature debate, and the legislature sort of waiting for Stillwater and the city of Norman, mm-hmm. who was also doing this. They said, are they going to pass these things? Because if they pass them, we're going to pass this bill. Mm-hmm. And everybody was sort of trying to outweigh each other, and eventually the legislature just went ahead and acted.
Right, yeah. It was just a bunch of delaying tactics. That was the thing. It was really interesting to see. They had lobbyists and stuff come in and just put pressure on the council. I don't know how many times I drove to Stillwater where I was like, this is the night we're going to be doing this. This is the night we're filming this. And then they wouldn't even be able to get up to speak because they'd have so many people there from other issues. And they would always fill. They'd always be filled with pro-oil people there just – simply slowing down the meeting is all it takes.
It was really interesting to watching the Stop Fracking Payne County group. There was this wonderful shot you had on, I guess, the latest delay. The chair mm-hmm. announces the delay, and you just see all these sort of dejected looks, and the heads are sort of hanging down. And
they're
tired. Yeah, that was just really – it was really an interesting
these
shot.
These are the people. They feel it every day, and they don't have money. That's their thing. They're active. They're a big grassroots organization. They're getting out there. They are the ones at the front of this fight. And, they're going up against, industry that controls the state.
The name of the film is Oklahoma Shakedown. You can see it tomorrow evening at a special showing at 6 o'clock at the Circle Cinema. That starts with a sort of a pre-showing talk.
Pre-discussion, followed by a Q&A with myself and Angela, and I believe Dakota will be there as well.
Yeah, and that's Angela Spotts and Dakota Rains from the Stop Wrecking Payne County Group. And do you have more showings scheduled? What's the plan for the film?
We have one more showing in Guthrie. I believe that's May 10th. Of course, follow us on Facebook, at Oklahoma Shakedown on Facebook, and at Oklahoma Shakedown Film on Twitter if you want to be kept up to date on all of our screenings and everything. Our ultimate goal later on is this summer. I plan to hold a Kickstarter or Indiegogo fund to get a more professional pass on the film post-production-wise. My weakness is editing and sound design. I just want to get someone that really has an eye to go through and touch that up. And then we're going to have a push to get it on iTunes and Amazon. It's going to end up costing probably between, $4,000 to $7,000 for that whole process. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested in that, follow us on Twitter at OK Shakedown Film and on Facebook, and we'll definitely keep you up to date on that.
How much did the whole film cost?
The whole film, I paid it out of pocket. It's part of my school fees and everything like that, it ended up costing, I believe, about $2,500. However, a vast majority of that was simply lodging and gas, driving all around the state, staying in all the small towns, the best motels and all the small towns. An expert on all the best places to stay in north small town Oklahoma.
All right. Well, you can see Oklahoma Shakedown tomorrow at the Circle Cinema. Taylor, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Taylor Mullins is the documentary filmmaker behind the film Oklahoma Shakedown, which has a showing tomorrow evening with a pre-film discussion beginning at 6 o'clock, a question and answer after the film at the Circle Cinema. The film just won Best Oklahoma Documentary this weekend at the Bare Bones Film Festival in Muskogee. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.